Tony, you're very, very welcome.
Thanks very much, Harry.
And I suppose, Tony, one of the things that when we were down here talking the other day, we were talking about the lovely library here. Came up with talking about the old library with the big signs up, Eunice, and don't talk and shh and all of this. This is a completely different world, isn't it?
The old library in Chapel Street, where I was born and reared as such, and we spent a lot of time there playing marbles in the front of it when we were young.
Not in the library now?
No, just on the sides. There was a lovely patch with the grass and the road. Ideal for marbles in the winter time, so we played there. But what I remember is there was a reading room beside it where you could go in, and all the daily papers had been up there. People could go in and read the papers free. But I remember when we were at school, we got our injections for, I think it was TB and stuff at the times. The nurse was there with the needle, and the whole school literally in terror, queuing up to get this jab into the top of your arm. And I remember, well, I had a reaction to it. My arms swelled up quite considerably. But we were terrified going for it. I remember, because there wasn't, it was just the needle went straight in.
There was no mercy.
No mercy.
And is that your memories, though, of the library?
Of the library, and down, of course, the children's library was upstairs where we were in the early years, but the downstairs library was quite small enough, you know, at that time. But it was.
It's wonderful to have such a such a facility here, you know. And last Thursday, when we were down with Pat doing the poetry reading and stuff, it was very quiet because that's the kind of a concert it was. And there was kids playing down there. They were with their parents and they had toys and everything like that. And the atmosphere was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Anyway, Tony, tell me a little bit about yourself. We know a lot about different things in your life when you were very public. But we know very, very little about Tony O'Kane, the sex symbol during the 60s, as a member of one of these bands that went round all the time. And then you matured a little bit then into being a sex symbol of the football, that you were chairman of the Dundalk Football Club and everything like that. And then, of course, your biggest sex symbol was in behind the bar, chatting up everybody. In the Century Bar.
Across the road, yeah.
But let's go back to the very beginning. Where did your father and mother come from? Where were the Dundalk people?
Yeah, my mother was one of the Fitzgeralds from the Quay. They had a pub there, Fitzgeralds Pub, right beside where the Centre is there. And it's boarded up in the front. And I spent all my childhood going up and down from Chapel Street there with my mother. Great memories of the Quay area. I loved it. I loved the people in it. And went to work there. It was one of my first jobs in Connick's office there. And I was there for quite a number of years and really, really enjoyed it.
I was told about that the other day, and I want to come back to that, but just stick to your childhood at the moment now. Where your father, where you were born in Chapel Street?
Chapel Street, yeah.
Okay.
Just facing the Christian Brothers Monastery.
You went to the Christian Brothers.
Right across the road. You'd never be late for school in our house, you know, 2 minutes walk across the road. My father worked all his life in the Labour Exchange in Barrack Street. I had one brother, Aidan. I never remember my grandparents on my father's side. They died quite young. The only granny I had was on my mother's side, and she was about 95, 96. And that's how I had only one granny growing up, which is unusual, you know. So.
Do you miss that talk?
Yes, I suppose I do. I never got to know them, you know. And my grandfather on my mother's side was from Cork. John Cork, they used to call him. He was a Corkonian. He came to town to work in one of the insurance offices, and he met my granny. She was Cecilia Green. And they married and had the pub there for years and years. I remember going to it until, I'd say it was into the late 50s, 60s when it was sold. But a lot of memories of that.
Was school time there, the Christians, it was hard enough in your time. Were there happy days for you?
Harry. I remember I'd be terrified going to the school the first day. Brother Frampton, I'll never forget him. He was the first Christian brother. And he had the beretta on him, very stern looking, been left over by my mother. I was terrified. But I suppose schooling was hard at that time, because I remember a lot of guys and a lot of clever guys that I was at school with that couldn't wait to leave school when they were 14, 15. They never went on for further education simply because it wasn't a pleasant place to be. Now, I'm not saying there were some great teachers that I had there, fantastic teachers. There were other ones that were a bit tough, and the discipline with the brothers could be quite hard at times. So it's a mixed feeling about school. You know, you had to make sure that you had your lessons and your spellings and your writing all perfect, or you were in trouble.
When you look back though at those days when we were at school, was the one regret I have is that Irish, which was walloped and kicked and pumped and everything into us. And I know Sean there is a great man for the Irish. I was talking about this to him not too long ago, actually. And my thing about it was that the teachers themselves hadn't a clue how to teach properly. They couldn't communicate with the students. And then they took the frustration out of it.
You know what? Anyone will know that I see Kevin Hall here, one of my own schoolmates here, and anyone who went to the Christian Brothers, everything was taught through Irish. We learned science through Irish, history through Irish, geography, every single subject was learned through Irish. So I had quite a good knowledge of it. Unfortunately, leaving school, I probably never had an opportunity of using it anymore. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the Irish. I definitely, it was one of my better subjects at school. But mixed memories of it. And as I said, a lot of talented guys that left school early and just never moved on, you know.
Would you call yourself growing up that you were well off, or were you just had enough to get by, or were you struggling like we were up on Hill Street? Oh, I think you say, Hill Street was a very clear place. Tom, my friend, Jerry Coates has only come in later on, and unfortunately Jerry came in when we were all wealthy. You know, but there were hard times just for certain people. How did you...
Well, I'll just give you an example, Harry. In our own home, you know, my grandchildren are about there and they're in and out. My granddaughter practically lives with us. And went up tonight. Granddad, is the radiators on for the showers? And I explained to her. I says, Jade, when we were young, you know, we lived in Chapel Street, we had no radiators.
What?
We had no radiators. We had no hot water. And we had an outside toilet in the yard. Nobody in Chapel Street had a bathroom at that time. I remember Barry's next door to us. They were the first house that ever got a bathroom. And we were invited in, Aidan and myself, for a bath on a Saturday night. I'd say we must have been 10 or 12 at the time. So no hot water. We got up in the morning to go to school. There was a range in the kitchen that my mother would have lit. And that was the only means of heating. You went to bed at night. No heatings in the room. In the winter time, you could blow your breath and nearly have ice in it. that was it. But everyone was the same at that time. It was just an unbelievable time. But we never complained. That was the norm for us. We knew no better.
And did you have money for books and everything like that immediately? Or did your mother, would she be able to give each of you some money each week? Or what?
Well, you know, we never struggled like if I wanted a pair of football boots or something, I think I got them at the time, or if there was a school excursion or something, we got them. My father had quite a good job in the Labour Exchange at that time. You know, it was termed a good job. But we never wanted as such, but we were the same. We were middle class, the same as most families, you know, struggling, I'd say. A lot of families struggling. And I remember Wrightson's Lane beside us in York Street, which were poor areas at the time. And I remember some of the lads of the Christian Brothers going to school in their bare feet. Yeah. I remember the paper boys outside St. Patrick's on Sunday, Harry, selling the papers, all in their bare feet, you know. And there were hard times as such, you know. There was no television. The only thing was radio. I remember listening on the radio to Ronnie Delaney winning his gold medal in Australia with my father, you know. Listening to the various programmes. You couldn't speak in our house on a Saturday at about 5 o'clock. My father used to do the pools, Littlewood pools, and you daren't speak because he'd be there ticking off the draws and wondering was he going to win a fortune this week, you know. But they were quite hard at that time. I remember Murphy's were the first house in Chapel Street to get a television. And I remember about 16 of us sitting around the television watching the Lone Ranger. We just thought this was just absolutely heaven.
And you could hardly see anything on it. So.
Absolutely. Then there was I don't know if anyone remembers, there was a series all called Quatermass in the Pit, and it frightened the living life out of us. We were huddled together with fear. But go back to that time, you know, the only means of entertainment there was really the picture house. That was it.
Well, there was how many picture houses? We often talk about this over the years. There's 5 or 6, 7, I think. Well,
there was, at one time, you had Park Street, the Oriel in Market Street. You had St Nicholas's Hall. The Dominican Hall used to show some films. The Adelphi. There was quite a lot, Harry. You know, but it was the only means really of entertaining us. And I remember maybe 10 or 12 of us would be going to the Oriel on a Saturday, and we might be maybe a shilling short, so we'd gather all the money up as best we could and just throw it there and ask for 10 tickets, and before she had time to count it, we were in.
Tony's going to sing a couple of songs for us this morning, and Tony, we'll take, as they say, a commercial break now. And
right.
What would you like to do?
Well, I have a varied repertoire, as let's say, over the years, but I'm going to do one now by a guy called Steve Harley. I liked him quite a lot, and I'm going to introduce Jerry Rice and mandolin. Jerry used to play with us in the famous Century Sessions there for years, and come on, Jerry.
Give Jerry a round of applause.
It's a slightly slower version than the one that was recorded, so it's a reinterpretation of my own version of it. Brought this rabble to the floor. You spoiled the game, no matter what you say. You're only metal, what a bore. Oh, your eyes, blue eyes, how can you tell so many lies? Come up and see me, make me smile. You do what you want, yeah, you're running wild. Oh, there's nothing left, it's all gone and run away. Oh, maybe you'll tarry for a while. It's just a test, a game for us to play. Oh, win or lose, you gotta smile. Resist. It's from yourself, you gotta hide. You come up and see me, you make me smile. You do what you want, yeah, you run wild. My belief in Mother Earth. Can you ignore my faith in everything? Oh, will you know what faith is and what it's worth?
resist, resist. It's from yourself, you gotta hide. You come up and see me, you make me smile. You do what you want, yeah, you're running wild. See me, you make me smile. You do what you want, yeah, you're running
wild. Oh, wasn't that wonderful? Isn't there a lovely sound out of the mandolin? It's absolutely gorgeous. Well, maybe he might do a wee tune for us later on, will you, Jerry, on your own?
Yeah, yeah, well, right. The acoustics here are brilliant. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Can everybody hear us?
Yes.
Are you okay at the back hearing it? Because you can move up along the side if you can. Tony, because we got into music now, were you always interested in music before you got involved in the band scene?
No, I'll tell you what. I went to see a film in the Magnet called The Tommy Steele Story. And I saw this guy playing a guitar, and I went home and I said...
Tony, could I ask you just about your... Just move them over. You're playing with them, and we can hear it on the recording,
right.
You see. You know? And that as well, Tony. Good man. Right, away you go.
Well, anyway, I went to the Tommy Steele Story, saw this guy playing the guitar, and I came home to my dad and said, I want a guitar. So at that time, Cummins Keys had guitars in the window at that stage. So I'd say they were shortly opened at that stage. So I passed no remarks about it. He said, will you learn it? Well, I said, I'd love to, you know. So I came home from school on Wednesday and the guitar was there. And next thing was to get lessons. So
how much was it, Tony? Have you any idea at that time?
Oh, I'd say it was about maybe £2, £3 at the time. To get lessons, Pat Curley in Park Street. Pat's in Australia at the moment. And I'm a great friend with him on Facebook. And Pat taught me there on a Saturday afternoon, a half a crown a lesson. There was about seven or eight of us there in the classes. And that's how I started off. And then, as you know, there were a lot of bands in Dundalk at that stage. You had the Flamingos, the Hurricanes, Paragon 7, loads of bands. So I used to go down and watch the bands rehearsing and pick up tips from the guitar player. They'd be rehearsing a number. When they'd finish, I'd go to the guitar player and say, well, what was that chord you played there? I didn't know this one, you know. And they'd show you, and it was mostly self-taught after that, listening to and watching different guitar players and picking up all the tips. But when I did my leaving in 1963, and I joined the band practically from leaving school. It was a band called the Young Vikings, and that was my first entry into the music. We spent about 5 years on the road, up and down Ireland, doing about four nights a week, and I just loved it, absolutely loved
what
it.
What money were you earning at that time, Tony?
Well, the money wouldn't be great, but the crack was absolutely brilliant. the hours were the biggest thing. You started on stage at that time at 9 o'clock, and you played till 2 a.m, and that was a long time. The band would take a break in the middle, and that was hard work. You know, when you see, like, getting on in later years when I moved into different other bands, you'd play for a max of 2 hours, you know, and you'd have a relief band on before you. But it was hard going, and then leaving a ballroom at 2 or 3 a.m, heading home, you wouldn't be home till 7 o'clock, and I'd be into work. I was into work at half eight, and 3 o'clock you'd be going out and putting water on your face in the toilet to try and stay awake. But I just loved it.
And how many nights a week would you be playing?
Oh, at least three.
Yeah, wow. All over the country. And you know, in the summertime, there were marquees literally everywhere. That was the big thing in the summertime. All the different parishes throughout Ireland would put up a marquee. They'd have bands there for a week at a time, you know. But I just loved it. I had a great passion for football too, but I was playing football at the time with the Bank Rovers at the time, and I had to make a decision that it was football and music, so I took the music trail. And
And did you ever think of going full time into it, Tony?
No, well, to me that was full time. Between working and doing three nights a week, that was full time, Harry, you know. And I remember working in the rates office with Aetna, my friend here, with Joe Corcoran and Shamie McDonald. And who else was there, Aetna?
Eddie Coffey,
yeah. Great, absolutely brilliant times. I just loved it there. And the hours were flexible. They suited me because you could come in at 10 o'clock or half 10 in the morning. Once the work was done, it was. I loved it there, the spell I was there, Aetna, with you. And it's great to see you here.
Go back to, just got away from the music for a second, to your job, when you said about your job, that you had your job during the day. Tell us what that was. That was down the quay?
In Connex, I was in the office there, and I did the shipping, because there was quite a lot of shipping there coming in. I used to do the reports for the customs and the ships coming in, etc. And it was a hive of activity down there. Like, people don't realise the amount of pubs in Quay Street was unbelievable at that time. I'm just looking at my granny's pub was there beside Century. Across the road you had Crossan's. They had a pub grocery. And right now where Connell's pub is, that was O'Callaghan's. They had a pub grocery. And then you had Tom Clark's below on the corner. You had the Green Ore. You had Paddy Duffy's up on the corner. The Windmill. The Shamrock. Unbelievable. I just think there was nothing else to do at that time when he drank.
And was this because of the boats coming in and everything?
Well, there was a hive of activity that time, because there was, you can imagine the amount of coal that was coming in, number one, because everyone relied on coal for the fires at that stage. So there was quite a demand for coal in town. And you must remember, we were supplying Monaghan, Cavan, all the inner counties there, who had come and be there on the docks when the boats came in, you know. And I can remember dockers there. There were quite a team of them. Like, and they'd be earning good money going from ship to ship. You know, they were doing well at that time.
How long did you stay there, Tony?
I was there, and then we amalgamated from CCO into CCO. You know, and then I suppose the turning point in my life probably was Billy Clark. They worked in the office there. Billy was there for about 40 years. A great character, and. I came to his retirement, and we went up to the Windmill, and Billy got a clock for his retirement.
Oh,
and he had a car at that time. He was a salesman. They wouldn't give him the car, and Billy was very disappointed. And he said, "Tony, you know, you're only a number here. That's all you are." And it got me thinking of maybe doing something else. So we were living on the Dublin Road at the time. I came home to Dublin and I said, you know, I don't know if I want to do this all my life, you know. And I don't know how we got the idea of a pub. Well, my cousin, Pat McCardle, had one. It was in the blood, Teresa's here. And I suppose it was a challenge. And Matt Sloan's pub across the road, where that was my local when I was growing up, a wonderful pub. It came on the market, and that was it. We just went for it. A lot of my friends give me advice to say, Tony, this could be a massive, massive step for you in life. I had young kids at the time. I was to leave our house. We were living in Prior and Grove up at the time. We had a nice house up there. And to make that step, but listen, we took a chance on it. And it was absolutely the best move we ever made in our lives. It was great for us.
It became a pub of many, many things. And I suppose, I know I talked to you before about this in an interview, that the highlight of your years there was the festival dramas.
The festival dramas, yeah. We used to put up, if anyone that knows the pub, there was a massive garden with it at the back, fantastic garden. And we used to put up a marquee there, the Maytime Festival, and we did the pub drama, which was massively successful. And I also did bands there for the week. I'd take bands from Belfast and Dublin and different places. and it was massive. It was absolutely brilliant for us.
When you, did you go to dance, you were playing at dances, but did you go to dances yourself?
And oh yeah,
how,
yeah.
How did you, was it through dances you met up with, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I met with a student dance in the Adelphi, so.
A student dance in the Adelphi?
You were playing a student dance, yeah. But I
oh,
remember
you were playing and she was in
she was in the audience there.
Right.
But
I would go a wee bit deeper in it than that.
Well, I'll go back. My memories, yeah. Firstly, would be going to the Adelphi. And the pavilion. We go to the pavilion firstly because it was there before the Adelphi, and every single weekend in the pavilion, you had a group from England, a top 10 group. I mean, someone that would be in the charts and Top of the Pops on Thursday night, and they'd be playing in the pavilion on the Sunday. And there's not a group in the 60s I don't believe that I've missed. They were there every single weekend. From Manfred Mann to the Searchers, every group you could imagine in England at the time, coming to Dundalk, and then the Adelphi opened, and they did the same. So you had a choice every weekend. Like you had such stars that like you had Chubby Checker, Roy Orbison, Johnny Cash, all these guys all came to town, absolutely massive stars, and they're great memories for me. Now, I missed a lot of them then when I went to the band because I'd be playing on the weekends, so I'd miss out on a few of them. But great memories. I remember going to the pavilion, I think it was on a Wednesday night after the Royal Show Band, they won a Carol Allen Award in Britain for being the biggest drawing band in the UK. And I'd say there must have been at least, I would reckon, 2,500 people in the pavilion. And if anyone remembers it, there was a little rickety door in the front. And that was the way in and the way out. And I often thought in later years, if, God forbid, there was a fire or a serious row, nobody would get out. Nobody. There was shoulder to shoulder. It was like the cop end at Liverpool on a football day match. Absolutely stuffed.
Go back to when did you get married?
1971.
Happy times.
Happy
yeah,
times,
great,
yeah.
Harry, yeah.
Yeah, great, yeah. 1971, yeah. Well, I met Dibden, as I said, in a student dance. I was playing in the Adelphi at one of the student dances and met her through that, and that's it. We're 45 years married now this year, a long time.
Were you going out with her long before you got married?
Yeah, I'd say from about 1969, probably 68, 69, about 2 or 3 years. And that was it. Harry, it was a big moment in my life, yeah. And great family. We've 11 grandkids now at the moment. And
are you a hands-on grandfather? Or
yes. When you get to my stage, Harry, you're a hands-on grandfather every day. It's my daughter yesterday morning arrived at 2. Dad, I'm just getting my hair done. Will you mind them for half an hour? That turns out to be 2.5 hours.
You know, are you softy? That's what this
I am.
You are.
I am.
And
yeah.
What about Dipney? Is she the same?
Oh yeah. But everything's. It's all channeled to me, Harry, you know.
Yeah, Dip
is busy with our clinic, you know. So you look after the kids and collect them from school and do the various things, you know. But I enjoy it. I do. I love them all.
Now, Tony, will we take another song?
Right.
And what would you like to do for us?
I think I'll do a Neil Young song. I always... I had different areas to see, Harry. I played... When I finished with the show bands, I went to the rock bands. Four-piece, because the show bands had their day. And then, nowadays, it's self-amusement with the acoustic guitar, and you're limited with an acoustic guitar, so you have to conform and find songs that suit. So Neil Young was always one of my favourites. I'll do a Neil Young song, Harvest Moon. It's a lovely song.
Okay.
A bit of a harmonica in this, so I hope it comes out okay.
what I have to say. Just like children sleeping, we're gonna dream this night away. But there's the big moon rising, let's go dancing in the light. We know what the music's playing, let's go out and feel the night. Cause I'm still in love with you, I wanna see you dance again. Cause I'm still in love with you. On this harvest moon,
Doc's favourites there, he was telling me there too. Yeah. Tony, I suppose we said when I was talking to you, we're not going to be talking about football
no,
this morning.
No,
keep
but
it football was a huge part of your life.
It was massive,
and
yeah.
And you played a lot of minor football, and then you got, of course, up to be chairman of the Dundalk Football Club in a very, very difficult time.
Oh, probably the worst time ever at the Dundalk Football Club in its history, I have to say. I was thrown in at a really deep end. Trevor Anderson was the manager at the time and Des Denning was the chairman, and we were propped at the bottom of the table, and it was really a terrible time. And just, I remember after one match in Oriel, Des got a lot of abuse from the fans, and he called a board meeting the next morning. Arrived in and Des resigned, and we're sitting looking at each other at the board, and I was left with the task of taking over the club, and it wasn't pretty. It wasn't. Jerry Curtis down there, an ardent fan, will tell. Hard times, Jerry, absolutely. Difficult times. But yes, it was.
It was probably one of the worst times, because the 60s, like when they turned the pitch round and everything like that, there were hard times, but they became very successful then. But that was probably the worst time that you were involved
in. It was harrowing.
And it cost you money, Tony.
It didn't as such, because it didn't personally, but the club was at a very, very low ebb. I remember on one occasion we were playing Finn Harps, and the players decided they weren't going to travel unless they hadn't been paid in a couple of weeks, and we did a terrible job persuading them to go, and there were definitely tough times at the North Football Club. Then we decided we'd go with the All Weather pitch for a source of revenue more than anything else, because we needed revenue. But it's great to see out of the darkness comes the light, and we're at the top table now. The last 2 years have been absolutely brilliant. Hopefully we're going to make it another three in a row this year, Jerry. So
you don't get cocky now, Tony.
No,
come
I think
now,
no. You have to
look at Leicester City now. Do
oh, so, yeah.
Listen, Jerry Curtis down there.
Yes. Last week we
have
to say three in a row, and it started.
Yes, absolutely.
Just a tidy wee story about Jerry Curtis there. Way back in 1965, when I was very much involved in the supporters club up there, and Jerry seems to have been up there all forever. But we were trying to run raffles and stuff, you know, and they decided to run a car. You know, a raffle for a car. It went on, I don't know how long it went on, but we eventually had the draw for the car. And I'll give you three guesses who won the brand new car in 1965. Jerry Curtis.
Oh,
yeah,
and
I've never forgiven you for that. Yeah, but when you think back, you know, the. Yeah. The thing that I'm not going to say it annoys me a bit, but when you see the younger people up there in Oriel Park now with the success of the team, and it's our shed, and the shed is ours, and no one's getting into it, only us and everything, and I often think back, I've spoken to Jerry a good few times about this, about if you go back, they think that there was nothing there before they started going up to Oriel Park, you know. But when you have people in Dundalk like the Francie Callan and Joe Martin and Benny Walsh, Lord of Mercy, and Sean McGarrity, Lord of Mercy, all these people who gave up their time for years and years and took nothing but abuse. And I always like them people to be remembered, Tony.
Absolutely, yeah. Enda McGuill, the same. Enda
was McGuill,
absolutely,
yeah.
The backbone of the club for all his life. But listen, Harry, when I was doing this interview now, you said specifically, we're not going to talk about football. And here you are asking me all these football questions.
That was it. I was just going to say it to you there. You're reading me mind. No, I know
because
that
I'm sure a lot of these people, we'd rather be talking about maybe different things in the town. As
but
I say.
The only thing is, Tony, it would have been unfair of me to go through talking to you for an hour without, because I knew it was a huge, big part of
course it
your
was,
life.
Of course
Tony,
it was.
Tony, moving on, have you any regrets, Tony? Would you change anything in your life?
You know, honestly, I couldn't say I have any regrets about life. I love it. Everything I got to do, I was privileged, especially with the success of the pub. I travelled the world in the great Jack Charlton era. I went to all the World Cups in Italy and America and all over. There's not a country in Europe that I haven't been to the matches, you know, and that was brilliant. But I haven't any regrets. If I had to do it all again, I don't think I could change it, because I had a fantastic youth. I remember, I'm just looking at St Mary's Road now with the cycle lanes in it. That was our playing pitch as far as playing football on the road, because in those times there was very little car traffic, so you could be playing on the road for half an hour before a car would come, and someone would shout, just stop. So whoever was on the ball, you just stood with it until the car passed and continued playing. You know, and I have great memories of down there, and the shows coming to the Marist. Remember the agricultural shows there coming to the Marist? They were massive at the time. I remember the hall in the Marist would have all the stalls, and I remember, I think, players had the main part of the hall on the stage. We used to go up and you could collect leaflets and all kinds of kinds of things. Of course, we got in over the wall. There was an admission charge. It was a big wall in the Maris Field, so it was easy to climb, and the priests weren't too agile. So,
you're talking about the shows coming there. Do you remember, was it in your time, the athletic grounds where the carnivals?
Oh yeah, I remember the carnivals as well. The Cinders and the athletic grounds. And I played Gaelic with the Young Irelands when I was young. But I remember the athletic grounds vividly. We played all our school football there. When you were at the Christian Brothers, you played in the athletic grounds. And it was a shame, I think, to see it go, because it was in a fantastic area of the town, you know, and it could have been developed there. As I said, we have Dowdall's Hill out there now as the main field, and parking is literally impossible at it, you know. But I have great memories there of the carnivals coming to the athletic grounds. I remember there were two African men, and they were jumping in hot coals. We were absolutely just amazed by this, and broken bottles. They were jumping in their bare feet in them. But when the carnival moved off, we had a fairly big back garden. We had everything in it. We went round and we got the remnants of the coals and the glass. So we were looking at them. So we got the coals and lit them. We were throwing them in our hands. They were just glowing. There was nothing in them. And all the glass was completely frozen, that all the edges were off it. It wouldn't harm their feet, you know.
But did you jump on them?
Oh, we did. We tried them out. We wanted to be part of the act. But I remember, too, there was a pitch and putt course in the Marist in the summertime. They had a 9-hole golf course there. Olive Norton used to run. I don't know if anyone remembers Olive. Olive was the organist in the Marist Church, and she was in charge of the little kiosk giving out the clubs. So we would absolutely bamboozle her. Six of us would go over for a round of golf, and you had to pick a putter and a driver. So we were in behind our back, and we'd have drivers and putters and extra balls and everything. So we decided we were going to have a golf course in our garden. So we got enough clubs, Harry, to take out with us across the wall, stashed them away, and my father had quite a nice garden at the time, but there was about 10 of us in the street got to work on it with shovels and spades. We dug bunkers, we put down a five-hole golf course, we got salmon tins and bean tins, and they were the cups to put the ball into. My father came home from work that evening, he went berserk. Berserk. But great times, Harry.
the other things, Tony, would you call yourself a religious man?
Spiritual. Now, like everything else, when you went to the Christian Brothers, there was a lot of religion. Like, you stood up every hour and said some prayers, you know, every on the hour. And the big thing was, on Sunday, you had to go to 9 o'clock Mass in St. Patrick's. The boys on one side and the convent on the other side. And if you didn't go to 9 o'clock Mass, you were severely punished on Monday. That was the first thing you were asked on Monday morning, what Mass did you go to? And if you weren't at 9 o'clock Mass, you were taken out, you were caned. You had to be there. And my father would always go to the Maris. The Maris Chapel was our chapel across the road. And sometimes my father would take me, he'd insist that I went to 10 o'clock Mass with him. But you were suffering the consequences on Monday morning. And if you tried to lie and say you were there, they'd ask someone in the class, who were you beside? Was he beside you? You were caught out straight away. But the memories of that, too, they were a bit disturbing, too, because you had the orphanage at the time below. And it was only in later years, when you're young, you don't think about the orphanage. And it was only in later years that I thought about it. You know, the girls, as I said, were on the right-hand side, boys on the left, and then about 10 rows behind were the orphans in their brown uniforms. And it was only later, you know, when you're 10, 12, 14, you don't think of these things. But in later life, I did. And it was harrowing to think of them there. They were isolated. They were like lepers. They were put into their own little section there. And I remember them walking around the town when we'd be playing in the park there on St. Mary's Road, all walking in unison there, and minders with them. And it must have been absolutely harrowing for them. And I live beside the orphanage now at the moment. I moved back into town there from Ravensdale. And every time I pass it, I feel a bleakness about the place, and you can feel a lack of love, let's say, for those children that were there, and God knows what became of them. And you know, we all have children, and you love them, and you're there for them in pain and suffering, and to think of those that were there, they were really unloved. You know, they were.
Tony, I suppose it's bringing back memories to me, seeing them walking around the town. And what you've just said there now is very touching, because you'd walk past them and you wouldn't even pass. At our age,
you just wouldn't pass them.
But looking back now...
It was harrowing. It was really, really terrible. Terrible. Singled out. And I remember the haircuts they had, all cut with the bowl haircuts, all the girls and the boys, it was mostly girls, I think, that were there at that time, really. The haircuts, you know, they stood out. It was terrible, terrible. I'm sure us playing football on the street there and passing, what was in their minds, what were they thinking, you know?
Tony, would you, when we're saying about religion, would you go to Mass every Sunday or not?
No, I have to say, Harry, I wouldn't go every Sunday. No, I've been perfectly honest. I would go at different times of the year, certainly. I wouldn't feel myself that I have to go to Mass to be less than a good Christian. I'd be humble enough to say I wouldn't do anyone any harm, and any charitable work or anything I could do or anyone I could help out, I certainly would. But as far as just being religious and going to Mass every Sunday, no, Harry, I wouldn't go. And the odd time I do go, I see the chapel really up to St. Patrick's beside me, and you could count the people that are there on a Sunday, the times it would go, and all you find is it's like our own era. It's the elderly that are there. There are no young people there from the 18 to 30 mark, absolutely. And I know from my own children are in their 40s now, and they have a completely different view in religion than I had growing up. You know,
in what way, Tony?
I think that there was a lot of damage done with the church and a lot of things cloaked, Harry. And I think, well, let's say that generation now have turned against the church. And I've been to a lot of weddings there in the last couple of years, and they're civil ceremonies. They're held in the hotel. Yeah. You know, people getting married, which I was aghast the first one I went to. People, they're not getting married in the church
anymore.
And
a lot of funerals. Totally
funerals the same, yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's a changed Ireland we're living in. You know, a really changed Ireland from I grew up in. And it is, it's as I say, the young people more or less have, I don't know. Harry, I look at the Green Church then beside us there, and it's closed up only for Sunday morning service. And I fear in the next 5 to 10 years, I think the churches in town will be much the same. I really do.
Sometimes when you talk, you know, like all the things that happened with the priests and everything, a couple of years ago I went down to the Redemptorist upstairs to the monastery, and all the old priests were sitting around up there, and there must have been about 20 of them. I knew a few of them, and these were priests who was away at the missions and everything like that, and I remember talking to them about it, and they are so hurt about all the things that happened. And like, you're right, that the generation now that's growing up, it's
Harry,
it's
there's fantastic priests out there. I have great, great friends that are priests, absolutely the best of guys, really in tune with what's happening and the way the world is now at the moment. Now, I'll just go back to our own house in Chapel Street. We lived directly across from the monastery, and there were an average of 32 Christian brothers there. And Brother Healy was the head master at that time. And I remember we'd be on the street there on a summer's night, and he'd come down and he'd lock that gate at 9 o'clock, big padlock round the gate. And those guys, 32 men, were in there. There was no TV, no radio, nothing. And most of them all came from rural backgrounds where the families decided someone's going to be a priest, someone's going to be a nun, someone's going to be a brother, they'll be educated. And then maybe coming into the late 50s, I remember defections, and we were at school and the Christian Brothers were, Brother Woods has left, did you hear, he's left, this sort of thing. Some of the brothers started to leave, but it was a harrowing life for them. I don't know how they could pass the time in those monasteries, locked up for so long there at night. And as I say, God, what was to keep them amused? Absolutely nothing. you'd really want to have a strong vocation to be there.
Johnny, just moving on about, have you, what would be, in your opinion, would be the funniest thing that ever happened to you, that you look back, that immediately comes to you?
The funniest thing, oh God.
Or the most embarrassing thing.
There was one.
Come on, tell us an embarrassing. Yeah, that'd be good.
I'm
wouldn't
going
it?
To tell
yeah.
you an embarrassing one, and I hope the people involved are all long gone. But we decided we went. There was about 10 of us on the street. We decided we'd go for a walk. Just we walked away out the Newry Road and went down by the Franciscan Convent, Mount Oliver, and we looked across the wall and. There was hundreds of chickens in a big pen, you know. So one of the older guys in the street, I won't mention him, he says, wouldn't it be great now if we got a chicken and we could take him home? And there was a derelict site at the bottom of Chapel Street there where Baldwin's house was there later. And we used to go in there, it was quite private, you could go in. He says, we'll roast the chicken in our fire. So anyway, two or three of us went in. And this older guy, he got the chicken, he says, I know how to kill it, absolutely no problem. And he went like this and pulled the neck, and the chicken fell down on the floor. And we're in 2 seconds, whack, 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 it's running around again. So he makes a second attempt at it. And he's really been vicious with it now. Chicken's lying on the ground, whack, 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 it's up again, running around. Finally gets it, he gets a big stone. Oh. Right? So he puts it up his jersey and we're starting walking, and so we get to about the Maris.
He was dead, was he?
The chicken was dead.
Oh, the chicken was dead, right.
We were all looking forward to it being roasted on the fire. We got to the Maris Chapel, the top of the Maris Chapel, and every mother in Chapel Street is out watching where we were all day. They're waiting for us. So he sees his mother there, he lifts the chicken out and he throws it over the railings into the Marist. So that was, we didn't have roast chicken, no. But it was a very funny moment for us, you know. But it was embarrassing. I used to think the nuns were there at the time. My God, we could have been arrested, you know.
Tony, we have to wind it up now, but Tony's just going to finish off with another song, but I know we said we weren't going to be talking about football, but there's only going to be about two minutes. You obviously have all your seats in the theatre and the stadiums booked, your hotel booked and everything for Ireland and the Eurovision.
Oh, looking to France, yeah. I'm going for, there's 10 of us going for the European Championships, and I always say maybe this will be the last one we'll qualify for. I won't see many more maybe, but we're getting there bit by bit. I'm looking forward to France. It's quite accessible now because it's only a hop across the water. I'm going to Paris for the first match, and then we're down to Bordeaux for 6 days in Bordeaux. We're staying in a little World Heritage village called Saint-Emilion outside it. Beautiful place. I sourced it out and look forward to there. And then we're back up to Lille in the north of France for the last match. So I'm really looking forward to that now in the summer.
Life is a bitch, isn't it, Tony?
It's absolutely awful, yeah, Harry. Yeah. It's awful.
Very, very sorry. We make a collection now, Tony.
Right, Harry.
Yeah. Tony, what are you going to... and maybe Jerry... Jerry, come up here for a second. Would Jerry play a wee tune for us?
Would you
play a wee tune for us, Jerry?
No, Jerry, sure. No, he doesn't.
Now, if you don't, there's no problem. I love the mandolin.
Yeah, he needs some backing.
That's no problem. So, what are you going to finish off?
I think I'm just thinking of a number there. It's a group of mine that I was always very fond of. The Kinks, Ray Davies, one of the greatest songwriters to me in this era, and it's a song called Days, and it sums up a lot of our lives. But first, I'd like to thank you all for coming. It's great seeing you. A lot of old faces there that I know from yesteryear. Thanks very much for being here. Thank you for the day. Those endless days are sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of
the day. I won't regret a single day, believe me. I bless the light, I bless the light that shines on you, believe me. Although you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe me. Days I remember all my life. Days when you can't tell wrong from right. You took my life, but then I knew that very soon you'd leave me. Well, it's all right. Now I'm not frightened of the night, believe me. I wish today could be tomorrow. The night is dark, it just brings sorrow anyway. But thank you for the days. Those endless days are sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days. I won't regret a single day, believe me. I bless the light, I bless the light that shines in you, believe me. Although you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe me. Days I remember all my life. Days when you can't tell wrong from right. You took my life, but then I knew that very soon you'd leave me. Well, it's all right. Now I'm not frightened of the night, believe me. Days, but thank you for the days. Those endless days are sacred days you gave me. I'm thinking of the days. I won't regret a single day, believe me. I bless the light. I bless the light that shines in you, believe me. Although you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe me. Days I remember all my life. Days when you can't tell wrong from right. You took my life, but then I knew that very soon you'd leave me. Well, it's all right. Now I'm not frightened of the night, believe me. Days, but thank you for the days.
Thank you very much. Nice. And a big thank you to my mandolin player, Jerry Rice.
Do we have a second? Can I just thank Tony very, very much indeed. When we came up with the idea and I rang Tony and said, would he do it? And he's so obliging. Yeah, no problem. I'd love to do it, you know. And I think it turned out all right.
That's great. Great. Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm delighted to see you all here and a lot of faces. Some of my school friends, Eileen, my neighbour from Brighton Street, and people that I've met in my lifetime here in the town. Lovely to see you all.
Well done. Thank you all very much indeed for coming. I really do appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks very much.